This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Happy Thursday, everyone. Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony is the president of the Family Research Council. I'm a 30-year media veteran, a journalist and producer of this very program, and it's an honor to be here today with you. A lot happening in Washington, D.C. Today, we're going to talk with Kansas Governor Sam Brownback. President Trump has nominated Governor Brownback as Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. He'll be here in just a moment. And we continue to get news concerning the tragic journey of 11-month-old Charlie Gard. Apparently, he's being moved from a hospital to a hospice. Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona will weigh in on that latest development following Mr. Brownback, and then we'll talk with Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio. He facilitated a hearing earlier today on Capitol Hill entitled Challenges to Freedom of Speech on College Campuses. And then, of course, we'll take your calls, write it down, put it to memory. You're going to call 866-372-7234 later in the program. Well, President Trump has nominated Kansas Governor Sam Brownback as Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom. Governor Brownback was elected Kansas governor in 2010, following a nearly 15-year period of service in the U.S. Senate. Governor Brownback, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's good to join you on the show. You guys do such a fabulous job of getting the news out, telling people what's happening. Thanks for doing that.
Well, thank you, Governor. You know, I lived in Newton, Kansas, was in Kansas for two different stints in my life and got to see your work and got to know Topeka well, so it's an honor to have you here today.
Well, it's good to join the show, and I'm honored to take on this new post. I got to go through a Senate confirmation, but the issues of international religious freedom, I just think, are central in the globe today, and I'm really honored the Trump administration has nominated me for it.
Well, the role was created back in 1998 and is charged with helping the U.S. government promote global religious freedom by highlighting abuses and making policy recommendations to lawmakers and the president. And I believe you just might have had something to do with that when you were serving in Congress.
I did. I was one of the sponsors and pushers of the bill, and just was honored to be a part of it. At that point in time, we were really seeing this issue coming to the forefront and then fighting for space in the foreign policy discussion. A lot of people don't want religion to be in the foreign policy discussion or religious persecution in there. Well, we had to fight for the space. We started there, and it was renewed under the Frank Wolf Act this last year. Unfortunately, I think the progress has not been made on the topic, and we really need to lean in. And this administration is committed to leaning in on the issues of religious freedom around the world.
So help us understand, part of the ambassador's responsibilities include issuing an annual report ranking how religious freedom fares in other countries. Isn't that right?
Well, there's a commission that does that, and the ambassador sits on the commission. That's a part of it. But the ambassador's role really is, as I see it, is to be the focal point and the voice within the administration and globally around the world for religious freedom. Rabbi Saperstein was in this role under the Obama administration at the end and did a good job of speaking out on it. I think we need to get more coordination within an administration focusing on it and start to see some things happening. Unfortunately, as I said earlier, I think things have really been trending the wrong way. I did a simple thing at noon today where I took communion. And that simple act done in other places around the world could get you killed and does get people killed. And one of the guys caught me afterwards that was from the Congo and said, I hope you speak up for people and what's taking place in the Congo. A friend of his was killed there for being of the wrong religion, of the wrong faith.
Well, the Trump administration has said that international religious freedom is a priority, and with Vice President Mike Pence pointing specifically to violence against Christians, as you just noted. So that's really important to have the support of this administration, right?
Oh, it's critical. Without it, we're just not going to get very far. But with it, we can fight for the space within the foreign policy discussion. And there's always a fight for what sort of topics get brought up in a discussion between two countries, and the U.S. leads these discussions. Getting religious freedom, religious liberty topics in that discussion will be critical, and this administration is committed to doing it like none that I've seen in the past.
Well, in the recent report that was released that we talked about just a moment ago, it lists 16 countries of what they call particular concern for religious freedom violations, including Russia, Pakistan, and Central African Republic. So I presume, as ambassador, you'll be keeping an eye on nations like that.
Be keeping an eye on nations like that. And then I want to get see us notch some wins in places. And then also just advocacy for individuals that are imprisoned in various places around the world because of their faith. And then as well, under the Frank Wolf Act this past year, they gave the ambassador the role of coordination within the government, the U.S. government, of international religious liberty issues. And I look forward to working with various branches and entities within the U.S. government bring focus on religious liberty.
So you will be advocating and having a significant role. You know, Governor, I remember when I lived in Kansas, you know, our friend Gracia Burnham and her husband were serving as missionaries in the Philippines. And of course, we all prayed for a year. I reported on that actually for years when I was working in TV there. And I remember getting that horrific call at 4 o'clock in the morning that Gracia had been picked up by our forces, but tragically her husband had been shot in that attempt. So I would imagine you will be involved with those situations where we have our own citizens that are captured or imprisoned in places like that.
Yes, on an international basis, and I remember that situation vividly. And I remember Gracia Burnham coming to Washington and meeting with then President George Bush about the efforts that were made to save her and her husband that were successful for her but not for him. Obviously, the role is much broader than that, too. It'll not only be people of Christian faith, but it'll be people of all faiths that are persecuted for their faiths around the world. And I've worked on various types of protections for people of faith. I was quoting Mother Teresa at a press conference today saying, I love all religion. I'm in love with my own. As the religion is the pursuit of the transcendent, the pursuit of God, I'm in love with my faith, but I look forward to really pushing religious freedom for everybody in every circumstance around the world.
Well, Governor, that's really important because I think there are some voices out there that would want folks to believe that, oh, this is just pushing Christianity down the throats of others that don't believe in that. And while you do, and I do certainly, we believe in our Christian faith and we follow it fervently, truly believing in religious freedom does allow others to practice their faith, even though we may not agree with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the first freedom of what you do with your own soul. And it's that pursuit, and it's such a key foundational freedom that you get to choose wherever it is that you place your faith or decide yourself, I'm not going to pursue anything. But it is just a foundational issue that it's hard to have a country grow if they don't allow that sort of freedom and that sort of pursuit, competition within the religious space for people to be free to choose whatever they want to do.
Are there some trouble spots that you have your eye on that you will be making an effort to look into and to bring information to the White House?
Well, you listed several of the key countries of concern by the report. And I think I've read through the full report, and I thought it was well done. But what I'm going to be looking for is chances to really move the ball forward on policy making and on policy ground, particularly within the administration, and then also advocating for people that are in prison around the world for their faith. I found when I was in the Senate, if you could give somebody that's a prisoner because of conscience, because of their faith around the world, if you could give them a face and a name to the government in that country, often you could keep them alive. Otherwise, if they were anonymous and unknown to the broader world, they disappeared. They were killed. We need to give names and faces to people that are in prison around the world and advocate for this. I just feel passionately about it, and I know so many people of faith in this country do as well to protect and to expand this freedom.
What are some of the policies that any come to mind that might be helpful?
Well, overseas, it's really to get you've got a series of laws that are limiting faith, and then you just have a lot of cases where the laws are fine, but they're not implemented. The people aren't protected, and we've got to push for their protection in places overseas. And then a lot of it is to really using the bully pulpit to push this, that this is an important hallmark of a growing dynamic nation, this freedom of religion, and us pushing that within the administration, me pushing it obviously, but at its highest levels possible.
Does the Daesh or ISIS and Boko Haram continue to rank amongst the most egregious abusers of religious freedom in the world?
They are. Unfortunately, there's competition for that space. There are others, too. One of the things I really appreciate about the Frank Wolf Act is they talk not just about country, but about non-state actors, like some of those that you just mentioned, and targeting people in those groups that persecute people of faith. Because in many instances, that is the area where people, their lives are impacted, is these non-state actors. And we've really got to be aggressive on addressing what they do, and we are in many places around the world, but also recognizing what they do against religious freedom and pushing for freedom.
And Governor, what can people do? I know that sounds like a basic question, but I would guess be informed. In talking with lots of folks, sometimes people just are misinformed or they're not informed. And isn't it our responsibility to be informed in what's going on around the world and what kind of religious persecution is taking place?
I think it is. The first thing I would ask people to do, and particularly listeners of your show, is pray. Lift people up and then get informed about what's taking place. Or even for individuals, pick a country that's on your heart and research it. If possible, go there to find out what's taking place and then advocate. And there are private groups that do advocacy.
Yes.
But also, you can write these governments in other places and advocate for individuals as well. And you could say, is that going to really do anything? And the answer is, I'm not sure it will, but it might.
Yes.
And do those sort of things that are on your heart that you target and you get done.
Well, Governor Brownback, thanks so much for being on Washington Watch. We've got to move on to the next segment, and blessings to you and your new journey. Thanks so much.
Thank you. God bless you all. Take care.
God bless you. Well, the tragic story of 11-month-old Charlie Gard in the United Kingdom has captured the hearts of millions. Apparently, he's headed to a facility. We'll talk with Congressman Trent Franks about this news when we return.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep, as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. A couple of years ago, my family and I moved into a new house. We were thrilled to see a maple tree in the front yard and were expecting it to turn fiery red in the fall. But when the seasons changed, its color did not. Turns out our tree is a silver maple, and when the easy warm days of summer are over, it just blends in with the rest of the world around it. You know, genuine Christian faith is more like the red maple. When the days get harder, it begins to shine all the brighter. Like Philippians 2, it says that in the midst of a crooked generation, the children of God shine among them like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. You can start receiving Anchor Devotional today, in print every month. Just visit getanchor.com.
27-year-old Acacia was pregnant and had just survived a deadly accident. Hi, Kim Catola for Cradle My Heart Today. In fact, only a month earlier, she'd spent 4 days in the ICU. Well, she considered abortion, but at a pregnancy help center, the counselor assured her that God has a purpose for everybody. Acacia told Pregnancy Help News, "A huge purpose of mine was to be alive. I was supposed to be dead a month earlier." This helped her see that she wasn't alone. And that confidence and hope helped her find a place to live, sign up for insurance, get a new job, and yes, to choose life for her son. Today, she says, "I tell him every single day that he's destined for great things." Find out more about Christ-centered resources offering help for unplanned pregnancy and hope after abortion at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
Well, welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, filling in for Tony Perkins. It's an honor to be with you here today. A British judge has ordered that critically ill infant Charlie Gard should be moved from a hospital to hospice, where he will inevitably die within a short time. And folks, this is just a tragic, tragic story. The 11-month-old baby has been battling a rare genetic disease that has captured international coverage, where the parents have been essentially handcuffed in the regards to the treatment and end-of-life decisions of their own child. In the early years of my life and in my work, I was a hospice chaplain. And having been to seminary, having served in the ministry for a number of years, I have done at least 100 funerals. And serving as a hospice chaplain was probably one of the more impactful pieces of work I've done. And there's nothing like dying with dignity. And hospice, at least here in the United States, provides that opportunity for folks to get care at home, to be in the comfort of their home where their loved ones are, and to have medical care and nurses come to the home, and mental health professionals come to the home, and a chaplain will come to the home if so desired. And I got to see that for about a couple of years when I was in Leavenworth, Kansas, and I worked as their chaplain. And it was an amazing opportunity. And to see this young couple struggle so much that they can't make their own decisions about the care of their child is just tragic. And we're waiting on Congressman Trent Franks. He's supposed to join us. He's supposed to join us here in just a little bit. And he has been passionate about this about this situation, and he has spoken out about Charlie Gard. He has spoken about getting them over here to the United States to get treatment, but the government there in the United Kingdom would not allow that to happen. And so now they're faced with trying to do what they can to make sure that their son dies with dignity. And it's very tragic. And there have been people on social media that talk about this, people that talk about the need for them to come over here. And Congressman Franks has fought hard to try to see that that would happen. And a matter of fact, on Monday, the little boy's parents ended their months-long legal fight to bring him to the United States for this experimental treatment. And British doctors say the treatment would only make the baby suffer. And his genetic disease makes it impossible to breathe on his own. And Charlie is not expected to live past his first birthday. And I know that just breaks your heart. It breaks mine. And the New York Presbyterian Hospital and Columbia University Irving Medical Center had offered to admit Charlie and provide him with an experimental treatment pending emergency FDA approval. And the American Medical Center had also offered to provide the Great Ormond Street Hospital with the drug if approved. And so the judge said that meant 11-month-old Charlie, who has a rare genetic disease, should now be transferred to a hospice and taken off of life support. So it's a very tragic situation, and we need to be in prayer for this family. We need to lift them up and support them the best we can from across the pond. In a statement, the hospital had said it deeply regretted that profound and heartfelt differences between Charlie's doctors and parents have had to be played out in court over such a protracted period of time. So we'll continue to follow this. We'll continue to let you know how it goes. The parents' lawyer, Grant Armstrong, said they wanted to spend days with Charlie at hospice before his death. And the parents aren't even being allowed to have this hospice in their home, but they have to go to another facility. And the hospital bosses said that they could not agree to the arrangement as his parents had not found a doctor for intensive care specialist for that. And commenting on that decision, Connie Yates, the mother, she said, We just want some peace with our son. Well, let us welcome Congressman Trent Franks from Arizona with us now. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm sorry we had trouble getting through, but I'm glad we're on now.
Well, Congressman, tell me, I know you've had some pretty strong feelings on this.
Well, I have. You know, I mean, I suppose the difficulty for all of us to realize is that we're all lying down there beside little Charlie Gard. I mean, he is sort of represents all of humanity, that we're at one time we were helpless and we shall be again. And in a sense, this was about, you know, what we consider the basic principles involved. And there's no one that, you know, would want anything bad for Charlie. But the problem is that, you know, when things like this happen, sooner or later, there are certain decisions that have to be made. And we're either going to make them in favor of life, or we're going to be casually dismissive of life. And we're either going to let complete strangers to Charlie make the decisions, or we're going to let those who love him most make the decisions.
Well, Congressman, didn't the family raise like over $1.6 million to pay for their son to receive experimental treatment here in the U.S., but weren't allowed to do that?
They did. And here's, you know, and as you know, I wrote on this said that, you know, none of us know what that would have done. But the parents had every right to pursue some specialized care for their child. That was their child, and they had every right to do that. If they had succeeded, of course, it would have been wonderful beyond our wildest dreams. If they hadn't, perhaps they would have known two things: that they did all they could for their baby, and number two, that they may have been part of learning something for the next little Charlie Gard, and maybe for hundreds of little Charlie Gards. And just that's how it all happens. And I've become very fearful when we decide that, or when we somehow relegate the decisions of these kinds of things to courts and to the medical community, when theirs is to first do no harm, the medical community.
Yes.
And courts should be the ultimate defenders of the parents' rights.
Right.
And the baby, not the ones that are saying, well, no, you don't. Yep. Let the parents have this baby back. You make sure he stays. Yep. Or you make sure that he dies.
Congressman Franks, thank you. We're up against a hard break. Thank you so much for being with us. Coming up next, we'll talk with Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, who was at a First Amendment hearing today. We'll be right back.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
I imagine that the question that I get most often when I travel about and I'm speaking, I'm doing town hall meetings, seminars, whatever the situation is, and of course on the radio every day, people ask me the question of how can I find a financial advisor that I can trust? And my answer is relatively simple. I really don't know. It's difficult to know the answer to that. I can give some red flags. I can give some things that you ought to be looking for. But you know what? I tell people all the time, and this is a sad state of the environment in which we live, but just because someone is a Christian doesn't mean that they're either knowledgeable enough to do the right thing or, in fact, are going to do the right thing. That's not always the case either. Here's a couple of things that you might want to look for. If you are interviewing, as you should do, a financial advisor, the first thing you should think about is, do they have a solution for me? In other words, do they immediately have something that would help me that they want to put me in? That's red flag number one, because without a real proper and thorough getting to know you, it's very difficult for a financial advisor to really understand what your needs are. See, the other thing is, do they have my goals and objectives and my best interests in mind, or is it in their best interest? You have to determine that. And last, the other thing is, do we both, if you're a married couple, feel good about that person? Or maybe the Lord has put a little bit of a check in your spirit. Pay attention and listen to it. It's usually right.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, filling in for Tony Perkins. And you want to make sure you follow us on social media. You can follow Tony at T Perkins on Twitter, at T Perkins on Twitter. And you can also follow what's going on at the Family Research Council at frc.org. That's frc.org. And you also want to go to Facebook if you're on Facebook and watch what's going on there. The Family Research Council often streams videos and has very informative policy speeches when they have people that come by the headquarters there at the Family Research Council. So much going on. And I'm telling you, if not for the Family Research Council, there's just a lot of things that may or may not be happening. They are in the trenches fighting every day for the values that we believe in. Well, today, earlier on Capitol Hill, the House Oversight and Government Reform Subcommittee held a hearing this morning addressing how free speech is being suppressed on many U.S. college campuses. I went to Mizzou. I kind of know something about that. Well, Congressman Jim Jordan, who represents the 4th Congressional District of Ohio and serves on both the Committee on the Judiciary and the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, he facilitated the hearing this morning, and he's with us now. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Russ. Good to be with you this afternoon. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you. I know you're busy doing a lot of things, good things. Yeah. I watched the hearing that streamed online this morning and noted how you opened the hearing with a video montage showing examples of free speech suppression like at Berkeley and Middlebury College, right?
Yep. Yeah, we sure did. And then we had a second clip for about 20, 25 seconds after that first 45, 50-second clip. The first one, like you said, shows all this stuff going on, including violence and what anyone I think would describe as riots. And then the final one is a clip of a students who've taken over the college president's office, basically holding him hostage, and he has to ask permission to go to the men's room. I mean, that's what it comes to when you suppress speech and do these kind of things and the political correctness and everything else that we see on our campuses today.
Well, Congressman, you know, I mentioned earlier, I went to the University of Missouri, one of the great state schools in the nation, and then it had its meltdown on the heels of the Ferguson riots, and I cringed as I watched my alma mater call for muscle and suppress freedom of speech and beliefs at a campus that has one of the best journalism schools in the nation. And it was very disappointing to me. And it's events like that, isn't it, that you called for this hearing?
Yeah, exactly. This country, I mean, the First Amendment is the First Amendment. It is that important. The founders understood it, and the rights there to practice your faith the way you think the good Lord wants you to assemble, the press rights, the right to petition your government, and certainly, most importantly, your right to speak, and to speak in a political fashion, to criticize your government, to criticize policy, to have a full, that should not be restricted, especially at places around the country that get your tax dollars like our public institutions. And so that's what this hearing was about. We're doing a series of hearings. Our first one was on the Johnson Amendment, which we think restricts the rights of pastors to preach from the pulpit in many ways. And our second one was on this issue. We're going to continue to do this series of hearings, highlighting the importance of that First Amendment.
Well, Congressman, where does the failure lie? Is it college administrators? Is it, you know, I heard one of the people on the panel there that says, hey, I think it was the comedian. We're the adults in the room.
And we
need to act that way.
Yeah, Ben Shapiro and as you pointed out, Adam Carolla, they were great, and Adam was so just he's a comedian because he's funny, and he was certainly funny today. But making good points with humor, you're exactly right. There has to be discipline for people who shout down speakers who prohibit and stop and restrict people from exercising their rights. Invited people onto campuses like Ben Shapiro, who've had people storm the stage, people. Not allow him to speak, and it's fine to have protesters, but do it peacefully, and do it in a way that doesn't restrict his ability to get his message across and communicate, and have that robust debate that we're supposed to have on college campuses.
Was there anyone's testimony on the panel that you were particularly that you found particularly helpful?
I thought Mr. Shapiro and Mr. Carolla did an outstanding job. But also people who come from the left, but also are true liberals, in that they say, look, I always say, get your best hold, make your best argument, and let the best ideas and the best, the ones with the most eloquent and articulate and reasoned arguments and logic, let that prevail. That's how it's supposed to be in our country. So I appreciated even the folks from the left, but I think Mr. Shapiro, Mr. Carolla were the ones that people so enjoyed listening to this morning at the hearing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the irony in all of this. A true liberal education embraces a variety of ideas. At least when I went to school, it was okay to have a civil disagreement, to agree to disagree, to debate the issues. But now it seems like even if you just think a conservative thought, it's not welcome.
Yeah, no, it's bad. It's why it's funny, and I mentioned this at the hearing, and I talk about this fairly often, is one of my good friends is actually a big liberal, and that's Dennis Kucinich, former member of Congress. And, you know, I'm about as far away from Dennis as you can be. But on civil liberty issues, we tended to be on the same page, and he's a friend, and that's the way it should be. You argue and debate from the perspective you believe in. I'll do the same on mine, and let's see which argument carries the day. But it shouldn't be in any way done in a negative fashion. It shouldn't be with insults, and it certainly shouldn't resort to violence, as we've seen on some of these campuses. But it seems like the hard left, and even the witness from the ACLU admitted that the vast majority of attacks and limits on free speech on campuses have been targeted towards conservatives and libertarian thinking and individuals. So that's
Congressman, we're up against a hard break. Can you hold on with us and take a few calls just for a minute? Hey, give us a call at 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. We want to hear about your experiences in your colleges and with your children. This is Washington Watch. We'll be right back.
Is there a cost to free speech? For nearly 40 years, Washington and much of the American public have held up disclosure and campaign finance laws as ideals and the path to cleaner and freer elections. In her book, The Intimidation Game, Kimberly Strassel provides firsthand accounts concerning how both have been hijacked by the left as weapons against free speech and free association, becoming the most powerful tools of those intent on silencing their political opposition. The book provides a chilling expose of political scare tactics and overreach, such as how Citizens United set off a wave of liberal harassment against conservative politicians and the targeting of Tea Party groups by the IRS.
Listen to Ms. Strassel as she discusses about her national bestseller, The Intimidation Game, How the Left is Silencing Free Speech, which chronicles recent attacks on conservative nonprofits, businesses, and donors at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
Christian apologist Frank Turek.
75% of young people walk away from the church once they leave the home, and one of the major reasons is they don't know why Christianity's true.
Join Frank Turek and others at Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics, October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Witness live debate and the premiere of American Family Association's documentary, The God Who Speaks. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
Did you know there are 9,000 year-round volunteers serving with Operation Christmas Child nationwide? That's right, and local teams are still growing as God calls new volunteers to directly connect with His global purposes. As part of a local team, how would you like to invest your time, skills, and passions so that millions of children can receive a gift of love and a message of hope? To learn more about volunteer opportunities in your area or to apply, visit samaritanspurse.org/volunteer with OCC.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tawny Perkins. Tony's out today, and it's an honor to be here. And Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio has agreed to stay on with us, take a few calls, and he facilitated a hearing today on the freedom of speech. And Congressman, I think I told you, it was a few years ago, I was with the alumni marching band at the University of Missouri, mm-hmm. Marching Mizzou.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was standing on the 50-yard line at halftime, and I watched an openly gay African-American student crowned homecoming king. And it was within a few weeks that an entire meltdown happened there at the University of Missouri. And I think there was a total disconnect. Is that what you see? Is there a disconnect that people say that there isn't a equality and there are all these different issues that are going on that are clamping down on freedom of speech?
Well, I think the problem we've seen of late is just this. It's like if you have a belief that the hard left doesn't think is appropriate, they will just dismiss you out of hand and say you don't even have a right to speak on campus. And instead of like saying we disagree with your position and here's why and here's the logic and reasoning and philosophy and concepts behind our belief and having a real debate, they just say, oh, you're wrong, and because you're wrong by their definition, we're not even going to let you speak. And no one spells it out better than Ben Shapiro when he's debating the left. In fact, he welcomes the debate from the left. He says, look, anyone who disagrees with me, you come to the front of the line, you get all the first questions. And he takes them head on. That's the way it's supposed to be. But unfortunately, we've now reached a point where it's like you can't even make your argument. And what seems to be happening is if you come from a conservative, maybe Judeo-Christian perspective or a libertarian perspective, you're just dismissed out of hand. Nope. But if you come from the left, you're in some cases even the left has been shouted down. But the vast majority of these are conservatives and libertarian thinking people and people from a Judeo-Christian perspective who are denied their opportunity to even make their argument, to even exercise their right to speak freely on a college campus. And that's the problem. And as we said in today's hearing, if it doesn't change, at some point we may have to look at all the federal tax dollars, all the money that comes from hardworking families like I get the privilege of representing, mm-hmm. that goes to these campuses.
Well, Congressman, let's take a few calls. Give us a call at 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And it'd be great if we could hear, just if there's some people listening that you've had some experiences where your freedom of speech has been shut down, or you have a child that wrote a paper, hey, you can't write on that topic, or whatever it is. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. And right now we've got Vince in Ohio on the phone.
Hi there.
Hey, Vince, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, good to be with you guys. And I really appreciate, I'm a constituent of Representative Jordan, and I really appreciate all the work he does. I'm every time I look at the voting that he's done, I'm in full agreement. And I think I represent a large section of this part of Ohio, so I think a lot of people are pleased.
What's your question, Vince?
Well, I guess I'm a professor in the area here, and I don't see a lot of activity on the campus, but Rhodes State College is not a real active, politically mm-hmm. active kind of campus. Do you see some benefit in making it more active or promoting that?
Well, I think historically, and I think it's a good thing. And Vince, thank you for your comments in Ohio, and more importantly, you're stuck with me as your member of Congress, so I appreciate you putting up with me. But I do think every university should have robust debate. I think that's healthy, as long as you're not, you know. We want the debate where you're not limiting the speech of conservatives, or frankly that matter liberals, because I think it makes us better. I like it when I get to debate with the folks on the other side. So I think we want to promote that as best we can and make sure none of it is restricted. That I think is positive. It served our country well, and it's like I said, the founders, when they put the Bill of Rights together, they made sure this was the very First Amendment, and your right to speak, and particularly to speak in a political nature, is just of paramount importance.
Well, Vince, thank you.
I got time for maybe one more, and then I got to run.
All right. Let's go to Ken in Oklahoma.
Gentlemen, hope you're having a great day.
Yes, thank you, Ken.
I would just like to say to the representative, I'm grieved about what I see on college campuses, but not just college campuses. I'm grieved about what I see in the United States House of Representatives. There are people in your body who are calling their political opposition horrific names. Yeah. And making horrific comments. This uncivil discourse has gotten to the point where we can no longer have a discussion about what's best for all of us, because some groups refuse to see that there's another side and would rather just shout you down. I'm grieved that it's that way. I don't know that Congress can take action on that kind of thing, but surely we can start censuring some people for commentary that is way beyond the pale as far as discussion goes.
Well said. Well said. It's why I referenced earlier when I think it is important that you debate, but it not get to the level where it's an insult, where it not get to the level where certainly anything moves in a violent or confrontational type of fashion. Let's have debate like it's supposed to be. Lincoln and Douglas, way back when, disagreed. Jefferson and Adams, way back when, disagreed. But they had real debate, and it didn't get to a level that we don't want. So I use the example of Mr. Kucinich and I, and we would debate a lot of things, but we also agree on some things. And he came from a far left perspective. I come from a very conservative perspective, but we are friends, and that's how it's supposed to be in this country, the greatest country ever, where we have these rights and privileges. Let's make sure we keep it that way, and let's make sure that place, which has sort of been the laboratory of that development of ideas and debates historically and this real fight over ideas, our college campuses, let's make sure it stays the same. So, Russ, I apologize. I got to run, but thank you for all the good work you guys are doing.
Congressman Jordan, thanks so much of Ohio. Thanks for coming on Washington Watch. Well, let's go to Donna in Tennessee, and give us a call right now. We want to hear your thoughts, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Donna, welcome to Washington Watch. Donna? I guess we lost Donna. Well, Congressman Jordan, as we've been talking about, held a hearing earlier this morning. It was the House Oversight and Government Reform Subcommittee, and it was fascinating. I watched it on the internet. It streamed live on the internet, and it was good to see a number of panel members from a variety of perspectives, liberal and conservative, but they were agreeing that there needs to be freedom of speech, even if you don't agree with what you're hearing. And we applaud Congressman Jordan for spearheading this movement, and we'll continue to keep you informed here on Washington Watch. Well, let's go to Kathy in Virginia. Kathy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering, I mean, I feel like this has gone pretty far already, and I know that the congressman mentioned withholding funds to these college campuses when these things get out of control. I was wondering how much more has to happen before funds are withheld, or if we can ask these colleges to sign a memorandum of understanding that's attached to the funds to prevent some of these things from happening in the future.
Well, the congressman is on record. I think he said yesterday that he did support withholding funds to campuses that block freedom of speech. And there's only a few ways that you can communicate to these institutions that you mean business. And, you know, I have four children, and they've been through college, and I have never seen such a season and a time where diversity of thought is not only welcome, but it's not desired that you even think it in your brain, much less that you verbalize it. So, you know, I know that he has presented that, and it was discussed yesterday, and we'll continue to watch and see where that goes. And I think there's going to be some good conversation that comes from this hearing today, and there'll be more hearings coming up. Kathy in Virginia, thanks so much. Okay, let's go to Oklahoma. Brenda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, hello. How are you, sir?
I am good. Thank you.
I went back to college at 49 and turned 50 my first year back 2008-2009 when Barack Obama got into office, and I was personally targeted from day one by some Hispanic girl, no idea where she came from. She saw me wearing a cross, she saw me with my Bible in my master's level classes, and the first thing she said to everybody out loud is, "You're a Christian, aren't you?" I said, "Certainly am." From that day on, day after day, week after week, I was harassed. She took my books, changed my seats, stole stuff from me. And then I was put on probation by the administration after some strange, bizarre stories. 15 things they said to me. I only knew of one that was even reality. And I was put on probation for 10 weeks with threat of removal from the northeastern state, Oklahoma, in Tahlequah, Oklahoma University, just because I was a Christian.
Well, it's important that you tell your story and that we as believers and Christians stand up and be strong. Tony says it here every day, to stand strong, don't grow weary, stay strong in the faith. And it's encouraging to hear each one another's stories, because it says that we're not alone. This isn't just an isolated event. It's happening at places all across the country. And, you know, I have been in this industry, in the media industry, for 30 some years, and it's very difficult to get invited to secular universities, even though I have 3 decades of experience that I would like to pass on to young students that would be important. So Brenda, thank you for sharing your story. I'm sorry that happened to you. All right, let's go to Georgia. Heather, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello.
Hi, Heather.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I really enjoy your show. I've been 20 years in the military, and I've never seen, and I was in college, and now I'm in college again, trying to finish what I started. Isn't it all really starting with the indoctrination with the college professors?
Well, yeah, I think there's statistics out there, but and they talked about it during the hearing today on the Hill, that an overwhelming majority of university professors embrace the liberal persuasion, are actually a part of the Democratic Party. Very few, less than 10%, I believe it is, are actual Republicans. And it's been my experience that that conservatives actually are more open to ideas, even though we may not agree, but are open to people sharing those ideas. Personally, I'm not threatened by someone who may disagree with me. I'm grieved by it. I'd like to see them look at something a different way, but I'm not threatened to hear them share that belief. And it, I wish it would reciprocate, don't you? It doesn't go the other way around a lot of times. Liberals often just don't want you to have a particular perspective, much less talk about it. So, you know, I do think it's happening there, and it's also happening in the media. A overwhelming percentage of journalists are registered Democrats and support the Democratic Party. So you're absolutely right. It starts there. And, you know, when I taught in a community college for about 8 years, and, you know, a out-of-the-closet atheist was one of my best students, and he almost quit my class, but he wound up taking 4 classes from me, and I made it clear, look, I do not agree with you. I don't agree with your ideology or your perspective, but I agree with your right to present it, and I will grade you accordingly, and it doesn't depend on whether I agree with it or not. And he consistently got A's because he supported his argument very well, and you know, at the end of his 4th class with me, after about 4 or 5 years, he said, Rush, you're my most favorite Christian, and I said, well, you are my most favorite atheist. Heather of Georgia, thanks so much. Let's go to Louisiana. Angela.
Hello.
Hi, Angela. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes. My daughter was in the university here, and her female professor was giving extra credit for her students to write a paper supporting a bill that had come up in Congress,
mm-hmm.
and she would give extra credit. My daughter said that she could not support her argument for the bill, but could she write her paper as an argument from her point of view, my daughter's point of view? And the professor told her no, that she could write the paper, but she would not receive the extra credit for it. So not only did she do that, then she put out an email letting her whole class know that there was one student in the class that was opposing her point of view, and proceeded to shame my daughter on an email to the whole entire class. So it was pretty moving for my daughter to have to go through that.
Well, Angela, tell your daughter to stand strong. Thanks for sharing your story. And folks, that's what we've got to do. Deuteronomy 31:6, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. For the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Hey, it's been a pleasure to be with you here on Washington Watch. Continue to stay tuned. Follow us on Twitter at T Perkins on Twitter. That's T Perkins, or FRC.org. If you like what you're hearing, go back, and all these programs are archived. You can download them and share them with your friends. So be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified. Folks, thank you. I'm Russ Jones. Lord willing, we'll see you tomorrow.
Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.